I've had two pisses already during this recording session. I discussed the aftermath of one of them, and that was the first one, I think, and then I had another later. I need another one now. I thought I'd fore off this whole urinating too much thing by having all my beverages quite early in the day. Horace finished my energy drink and coffee consumption by about 11:15 this morning. I did it an hour or two earlier than usual. I'm still finding myself needing to piss. I suppose the time of day doesn't really affect what happens to the liquid, does it? No. Although you would imagine, well, I would imagine, as I'm doing now, that the way our bodies work, we all know that the first piss of the day, when you wake up early in the morning, the first piss of the day is a very substantial one, full of all sorts of materials. If your doctor asks you to do a urine test, he'll often tell you to try and get the first of the day, the first one you have after you get up. Before you get up officially, but get out of bed and do it in the bathroom. The first of the day, for some reason, is considered a good sample, so there's obviously something different about that. Now, why would that have any relevance here? I wonder if I wanted to podcast early in the morning, but I wanted to still do what I do now, which is to caffeinate an energy drink for a couple of hours before. Perhaps I could wake myself up a couple of times during the night and have a few sips of energy drink and coffee that I keep beside the bed and then go back to sleep each time. Would that work, maybe? I wouldn't want to be setting an alarm and waking myself up every hour to consume these beverages. But what I could do is drink so much water or milk when I'm going to bed that I naturally wake up for a piss several times during the night. And each time I wake up, I could drink half a cup of coffee, maybe iced coffee or energy drinks, and they could start digesting and they'd be ready for when I am ready to officially get up. And then I could start my broadcast day a lot earlier than I do. But I don't think I'd want to do that. I don't think I'd like doing it in the afternoon the way I do it now. It suits me fine. So why change anything that doesn't need changing? No. Don't change stuff that doesn't need changing. Everything's fine the way it is. It's perfectly fine. Perfectly fine, so let's not worry about that. No, I think the only thing I haven't liked about today is the fact that I seem to be going on to my third piss of the afternoon. That's a bit much, I don't know. Maybe it's not. I can hold off on this one until I'm finished recording and then have it as I exit the room. I don't have to get up and come back here again and get going again, so I suppose it's not an interruption. It will be a curtailment, though, if I have to go soon. Well, I was going to go soon anyway, so it's not a curtailment. So what am I talking about? I don't know. I'm talking about pissing. I'm overthinking and over-talking the process of pissing. That's what I'm doing. I know you're thinking recently, since the comeback of this podcast in late 2003, I've talked an awful lot about toilet plumbing, both inside and out. And by inside, I mean inside the body, but out, as in not outside of the house, inside the house, the plumbing of the house. I do talk about that quite a lot. I think it's partly because nowadays I'm recording this room that has an ensuite toilet. I keep the door of the ensuite toilet open, so it's always in the corner of my eye, that toilet room. I'm looking at it right now. I can't see the toilet or the sink or the shower that's in there. I can just see the wall. But I know what's in there. The toilet just around the corner of the door frame. It's out of view, but I know it's there. It's there and it's making me think about pissing. It's making me think about pissing. The more toilets you have in your house, the more you think about pissing. And the more you think about pissing, well, you probably don't piss more, but you might need to piss more often or sooner. Because you don't create extra waste just by thinking about it. No. But if you're thinking about it a lot because you see the toilet in the corner of your eye, you might have to do it more often or at least do it sooner than you would otherwise have thought of. Because it comes to your mind. Well, I suppose it's not like I have anything more important to do. Obviously not since I'm doing this. No, I don't have anything more important to do. Of course, there's more than one way to interpret that. Some people would say, yeah, it's not like I've anything more important to do, so I'll do this unimportant thing, this just a mere unimportant, completely unimportant process of cleaning out my system of waste that if you didn't clean the house, you'd die. You know, you have to piss or you'll die. You'll either explode or if you don't create piss somehow, your body will fill up with toxins and you'll die. So it's quite important. So don't dismiss it. If you think I talk about pissing a lot, pissing is as important as eating or breathing. You need to piss. You need to piss unless you become one of those people who doesn't consume water, which I don't think is a thing. There's been one or two people in history who have claimed not to eat and they survive on air. But I think even them, they drink water, therefore they piss. Therefore they piss. Will that be a good show title? Therefore they piss. I don't like to put words like that in the title. So maybe if I can have something less obvious. Therefore they excrete, no. Therefore they, if I put therefore they pour, and you won't know what that's about until you listen to it. And then you look back at it and you'll say, oh, that was about pissing. Isn't that hilarious? Not there, no. Therefore they pour. No, that's, I don't like that. Therefore they, I don't know. I think of something that means therefore they piss, but doesn't mention pissing and isn't obvious until you've heard it. None of it will make sense until you hear what I just said. If you're one of the people who came to this program because you saw the title, hopefully it was very clever that I eventually come up with. You come along and you hear, oh, this is why that came from. That's very clever. He wanted to say therefore they piss, but he didn't want to be so outright about it. Forthright. So he came up with something clever, which hopefully I will between now and the publication date, which will be either tomorrow or the next day, all going well. Why would you need to know that? You don't. Well, it just gives you some background colour and the whole thing. Anyway. If you're listening to this in the airspace between your kitchen floor and your kitchen ceiling and the various walls of your kitchen, you may well be standing on the kitchen floor. I know that sounds a bit odd, standing on your kitchen floor. Well, no, you're as much standing on your kitchen floor as you would be standing on your kitchen table if you were standing on your kitchen table. Or if you were standing on a chair in the kitchen, as you are standing on a chair if you're standing on a chair. So don't think you're exempt from that sort of thing. You're as weird as it sounds. Don't think, oh, that doesn't apply to me. I'm not standing on anything. You are. You are standing on anything. If you're in the kitchen, you're standing on the kitchen floor. And that's not to take away from it. There's nothing wrong with just standing there doing stuff. It's perfectly reasonable. I try to avoid standing in my kitchen. When I'm doing anything in my kitchen, I get a chair. If I'm cooking, I pull the chair up to the cooker and I sit there. I don't understand why nobody else in the world seems to want to do this. Ah, they all go on about how cooking is exhausting. We don't have time for cooking or doing washing up or anything like that. And I think half of the problem is you don't realize you can sit down while you're cooking. You can sit down while you're cooking. It's perfectly legal. Well, with it, well, I presume it's legal. Maybe it isn't. Now that I think about it, I drag a chair up to the cooker when I'm cooking, and I drag a chair up to the kitchen counter when I'm preparing food. I even drag a chair up to the dishwasher when I'm loading it. And it's partly so I can see it and do it safely. But now that I think about it, they have laws regarding things like the light switches and the shaver sockets in bathrooms. The light switch has to be outside of the room for safety. So maybe there's some law about pulling a chair up to your oven or your sink. Maybe there's a reason kitchens are designed to be stood in and you're not supposed to use them like that. If I was to install a permanent chair in there as part of the structure with I'd be in breach of the same sort of planning regulations that tell me I can't have a light switch inside the bathroom. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's considered dangerous. Well then, redesign kitchens. It's 2025. We've been having these modern homes exhibitions and kitchen appliances and shit since the 1950s. Nobody has brought in sitting down in the kitchen work area. They'll sit when they're sitting down to eat, but they won't sit when they're preparing food. That's just weird. Why won't you sit? Absolutely fucking ridiculous. I used to have an old office chair that I used for this purpose because it had wheels. There was a swivel chair. Remove the back of the chair, take up less space, and I'd slide around the kitchen on this. It was great. Next time I break an office chair, which I'm planning to do soon, I'm going to use the broken one in the kitchen. Sitting in the kitchen is great. It shouldn't be great. It should be something that we've always done. We should be as used to it as we are to using a washing machine, which most of us learned how to do in our 20s, at the very latest. But nobody told us to sit down in the kitchen while you're doing stuff. No. Incidentally, I don't have a washing machine in the kitchen. I have one in the shed. A washer and a dryer, and I sit when I'm loading those as well. There's no room for a chair, but I have some sort of a... I think it's an upside-down bucket at the moment. Is that right? I think so, yes. I broke something and then replaced it with something else. Yes, I think what I'm using at the moment as my sitting down in the laundry shed thing is an upside-down bucket right down level with the washing machines. So I can have some hope of seeing where the dial is pointing. Ask yourself, why are you not sitting down while you're doing stuff in your house when you could be? Especially if you're one of these people who goes around saying, oh, I'm exhausted. I don't have time to be doing anything around the house. I need to sit down and relax. You can sit down and relax at the cooker. You can even listen to podcasts where you do. I listen to podcasts while I'm doing this. I sit at the cooker. I have stuff in the frying pan and stuff in the oven. I'm sitting there with a good view. I have it at eye level nearly. Sitting there and I have my earphones in listening to podcasts. And it's great. It's very relaxing. It's not quite as relaxing as sitting in an armchair doing nothing. Who wants to be sitting in an armchair doing nothing? Nobody. You go and relax for an hour in an armchair and you spend the rest of the day thinking, oh Christ, that was very unproductive. You can sit in your kitchen relaxing, listening to podcasts to be very productive. It's great. I highly recommend. Come to think of it, I've been doing this for a long time. I think I probably started doing this in the very early years of this podcast. So I should apologize for not having mentioned it up till now, of being withholding this very useful life hack from you. I could have told you 15 years ago. So that was terrible of me. Now I know what you're thinking there. Well, I know what I'm thinking here. I'll be among the first people to listen to this podcast. In fact, I'll hear it before it even gets turned into a podcast. I'm hearing it now, in fact. So this applies to me as much as it does to you. In fact, even more so. When I say I know what you're thinking there, I know what I'm thinking here. And what I'm thinking here is how does the sitting down thing apply in the bathroom? Now, if you're me, you're making more work for yourself and others by urinating standing up. You should sit down. Sit down on the toilet. Have a nice sit down there on the toilet when you're doing that. Well, you're probably also thinking, you're only going to be there for half a minute, maybe, or a minute, and you're going to the trouble of sitting down, lowering yourself onto this pedestal, and then raising yourself up, and then going washing your hands, hopefully. You're thinking, no, that's too much effort. I'm not going to go to the trouble of sitting down when I could stay standing if I'm only going to be sitting down momentarily. Well, think of the work later. If you do it sitting down, then there's less chance of you making a mess that you're going to have to clean up later. Now, of course, that's another thing I do. Well, I say, of course, probably it hasn't occurred to you. I clean the bathroom sitting down as well. I have a stool I keep in the hall. I bring the stool into the bathroom. I sit in front of the toilet and I clean. Spray and clean. And I even mop the floor sitting down. It's great. how I do it because of my various needs that may be different from yours. Less chance of killing myself if I do this sitting down. But no, I might be opening up a whole new world to you. Maybe you think that's a bit far. You might be thinking, oh, I'm up for the sitting at the kitchen worktop thing. Maybe not the oven and the cooker. That's a bit much, you're thinking. Well, actually, now that you mention it, it's quite hard to make room for your legs under the cooker. It's not like sitting at a desk and there's no way to do that. Maybe you could design a countertop like that, having some leg space under the outer part of the countertop, so it's like sitting at a little desk. You can't really do that with the oven, or can you? Suppose you can get one. You don't need the separate grill. Have the oven up on top, have some foot space underneath. I suppose that might be dangerous, though. But no, you're thinking in the bathroom. No, that's a step too far. It's not a step too far at all. It's quite the opposite. It can change, well, I exaggerate a bit to say it'll change your life. But if you're doing all of this stuff that I'm recommending today, it's like a major change in your life. You sit down while you're cleaning the bathroom. It's great. Now, you can't do everything sitting down in there. You can't scrub the ceiling sitting down. I'll admit that. You'll be surprised how much you can get done sitting down on a little stool in your bathroom or sitting down on an old office chair in your kitchen. Or sitting down on a stool in your hall in front of that weird little cupboard that's sitting on top of another cupboard, both of which have cats going into a little hole in the side and has a weird smell out of it that arises every day or two that needs to be dealt with. You sit in front of that, listening to podcasts, not thinking at all about what you're doing, have a big black bag ready to shove everything into so you don't have to look at it too much. Straight into the bag, put it on. Figure out, oh, there's another one for you. If you're doing that, if you're doing a lot of emptying dishwasher trays and going around the house, emptying bins and things, those little baskets on wheels of the type that they use in supermarkets nowadays, if you're not getting a trolley and you don't want to carry the basket, you get these deep baskets that are on wheels. It's like pulling a little suitcase after you, except it's a plastic basket. Those are great for that. You bring in your stool into the hall where your cat toilets are. You bring in that little basket thing. Don't steal one from a shop. Buy one. Don't be a cheapskate. Buy one of those. When you're using it for these purposes, you line it with a big black bag just in case, because you're going to be dumping a load of shit and litter into this. Empty the bathroom bin while you're there. Any other bins around the house, empty them into that. You shove that all. Eventually, you know, you finish off, you have the litter all changed, and you have your basket full of all this stuff ready to be brought out to the outside bin all in one go. That's how you do it. And nobody does it like this. Maybe it's because many years ago I gave myself a minor head injury carrying the cat litter out to the bin. That might be why I do this. I suppose there's something to be said for that. Well, I'm saving you from such an injury that I'm not going to go into the story again of how I knocked myself out while changing the litter trays about 15 years ago. Well, no, I haven't looked back. I've got this basket. I shove all the litter stuff in there and I just wheel it out. It's exactly like one of those business people going into the airport at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday morning for a day of meetings in London or somewhere, and I'm pulling this little wheelie case after me. It's not a wheelie case, of course. It's a shopping basket, a plastic shopping basket full of bags of shit and cat litter and rubbish. If I pull that behind me to the bins outside, and it feels like it could be doing that because you're not looking in it. You're pulling it behind you when you're doing that. You're not looking at it. And it's only when you get to the wheelie bins and you have to lift them up. I usually lift it up on top of the recycling bin and then tip everything into the main bins from there. Now, you wouldn't do that in an airport either. But that's okay. Don't have to base everything on. You don't go, oh, that's not realistic because I wouldn't do it in an airport. No, it's okay. You probably wouldn't clean the bathrooms in an airport either. And that doesn't take away from the fact that I've given you some good advice here that'll enrich your day-to-day life. You don't even have to buy a lotto ticket. You've already won just by chancing onto this program and listening to this segment. I know not everyone will want to do this, but if you're one of the people who find yourself perking up and listening to this advice and thinking, oh, wait, I think that might be good for me. This is like winning a small amount of money on a small scratch card. You got lucky today. You chanced upon something helpful. It's not even in an educational podcast. It's just me talking shit. You stumbled upon this advice. I like to think there's one or two people who'll hear this today out of the 100 or so, the rest of whom will say, oh, a load of bollocks. There'll be maybe two people that'll hear this, and for the rest of their life, until they get too old to cook or clean anyway, they'll start this whole new thing where they do everything sitting down. And it's going to change your life somewhat. So I wish you the very best with that, those two people. And to the other 98, I say, just be happy for those two. Just as when you buy the Euro Millions lotto ticket and someone in your country wins, as happens about once every 20 weeks, someone in your country wins the Euro Millions. Be happy for them. You don't go around saying, fuck them. No, be happy for them. If it helps, pretend you're watching some reality show and the people who you liked are doing well. Pretend you like them. You might like them anyway. You don't know. They're very unlikely that you know the people who won the Euro Millions this week. So you can be happy for them because you can just imagine that it's someone who you like. Think, oh, look, someone won the Euro Millions. I bet you that's someone who's very nice to cats and who's a very nice person and who's a member of the same political persuasion as me, wherever that may be. And they like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches just as I do. Now, of course, if you're into peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, you're probably in America. And I don't think America partakes in the Euro Millions lottery, so that's not relevant. But you have all your ridiculous lotteries over there. You have your mega billions or something. And then you have whatever else you have. That's what you have over there. You have your peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and you have your whatever else you have over there. Now, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. We're fascinated over here outside of America with this thing. We hear about these peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. We hear about them on Twitter, or we see people making them on sitcoms, or we see them on Kill Bill Volume 2. Actually, I don't think that's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, is it? Well, it's probably not. In Kill Bill Volume 2, Bill spends some time in the kitchen with a child for whom he's making a sandwich. And he's there for ages preparing this sandwich. He's got this huge knife. He's buttering the bread with this knife. You use a butter knife for that. Don't use the big knife for that. You don't need the knife until the end when you're cutting it in two. And even then, you shouldn't need it for a little sandwich like that. I can't remember. Is Bill standing? Because spoiler alert, Bill dies not long after that. His character dies in the movie. So that's one of the last moments of his life. He's there getting to know this child. I think she's a relative or something. Making them a sandwich. And one of these last moments he has of normal life in the kitchen. He doesn't even sit down. Sit down. But every time you're in the kitchen, that could be the last good hour of your life. Sit down and relax and enjoy it. And just stand there. He's there having to talk to a child, answer its stupid questions. Hard enough making a sandwich like that anyway. I don't think it's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich he's making now that I think about it. I think it's probably some ham and cheese or something. Do you give ham and cheese to children? I don't know. Never had children, I don't know. Do they eat cheese? Do they eat ham? They probably do. Well, who eats the peanut butter and jelly then? Maybe the child eats that too, but not at the same time. Maybe they make different things on different days. I suppose that's possible. Suppose that's what I remember as a child. Some days I'd have tomato sandwiches. Some days I'd have jam. You Americans call jam jelly. For some reason you think, oh, we're going to confuse everyone now. We're going to cover the peanut butter in jam, but we'll say it's jelly. Now, jelly in the rest of the world is a product you get from animals that a lot of people, even non-vegans, think that jelly is a fucking ridiculous and stupid product to be avoided because it's made from some sort of, especially like, it's like horse glue, except it's edible. It's not a solvent. So you're able to eat it. But it's made from some ridiculous part of the cow or something, isn't it? Gelatine. I think so, isn't it? Not right. Or wait, is gelatine the stuff, the jelly stuff that when you cook a ham, it's on the edge of it, that disgusting stuff? Well, they find some way to make it non-disgusting. Well, I suppose that's a good thing the food industry has done. Or I come across this jelly stuff on a ham that I've cooked, I find that gross. I throw away in the round filing cabinet known as a cat food bowl. You don't want that. But somehow the food industry has figured out a way to turn that into something more palatable. It's even used in desserts. But you're confusing the issue in America because you have this stuff called jam and you call that jelly. It's not jelly. You're putting people off jam calling it that. Unless your jam over there is really even more disgusting than what jelly is on paper. Jelly on paper is something gross and disgusting along the same lines as horse glue. But they don't make us eat horse glue. So, I don't know. Anyway, that's Bill for you. He's dead. Your man who plays Bill, he died too a few years after that. Under different circumstances to those depicted in the movie Kill Bill Volume 2. In the movie Kill Bill Volume 2, I'm going to spoil this further for you, so get over it. If you haven't seen Kill Bill Volume 2, it's nearly 20 years old, so get over it. Towards the end, you find out that ridiculous woman who went to that ridiculous karate instructor or something, who's this 3 billion year old, one of those pointy beards who's stereotypically everything. He teaches her this trick where you slap Bill in a particular order, you tap him 3 times on the head and then point at his chest and then trip him or something and then grin at him. And then somehow he knows that when he goes and takes 5 steps, he stands up and takes 5 steps, he will then drop dead because of the move she performed on him. He says to her, "How do I look?" And she says something like, "Oh, you look great." This woman who's literally in the middle of murdering him, and he's just realized that she's set in motion his death using this karate move. So he's about to stand up and take 5 steps and then drop dead. And he's there being all friendly about it. "Oh, aren't you great? You killed me. You learned your karate move and now you've killed me. I'm about to die." Of course, it never occurs to anyone that he could just decide, "I'm never going to walk again." He's been set up so that he takes 5 steps and then his heart stops or something. Just get a wheelchair. That's another instance in which using a chair for everything would be to your advantage. Now, of course, you spend the next 5 years avoiding taking those 5 steps. And then occasionally you have to use 1. And you realize, "Oh, I'm down to 4 now." Sometimes you might have to get up out of your wheelchair to stand over the toilet or something, or open a door. And then you get down to, at some point you're going to get down to where you've only 1 step left. And that's going to be a problem. You'd be worrying then. You'd be afraid to go to sleep in case you start sleepwalking. So no, you wouldn't want that. That's undesirable. But also, dying is undesirable. So you'd be doing this to avoid dying by not taking the steps. It's probably quite impractical. That's Kill Bill for you. That's Kill Bill. You'll have a great time watching Kill Bill now, because I've told you what happens, so you won't be all stressed, wondering how a hen is, wondering, is everyone going to end up okay? Your one ends up, I think she wins the lotto or something, and then flies home and spends the rest of her life in a world that doesn't have Bill in it, which is apparently all she ever wanted. Well, in her defense, he did kill her. Well, it wasn't her husband, or was it? He shot everyone at the wedding. I don't know if they had completed the marriage ceremony yet, or if they'd signed the legal register yet. I don't know. I can't remember. I'm not going to rewatch it. You only need to watch something like that once. You find out what happens, and then if there's anything worth remembering, you'll remember it on your podcast 10 years later. And if there's anything not worth remembering, it just won't float to the top of your consciousness. Are you going? I'd say it's every approximately 2 minutes starting now. This is a rough estimate. I think if we started the clock now, a countdown from 120 seconds and counted it down to zero, I'd say by the time we get to zero, that's how long it would take for me to ascertain whether it's currently raining outside or whether it's just a toilet refilling. Now, I know if you're living in some other part of the world that doesn't have the same toilet system as us, or if you're from another planet or you're listening in the future on the Internet Archive, you're probably wondering, why would a toilet refill after you've used it? Did you drink out of it or something? A toilet is not a reservoir, it's quite the opposite. From what we understand from our history books and our geography books from studying the part of the world where this podcast was produced back in the 21st century, our understanding is that he had these things called toilets and you went and stood or sat at them and you filled them up. So why would there be a 2 minute period where it's refilling? Well, that's a good question. I don't know, is the answer. Seems quite ridiculous to me as well, I have to tell you, but I don't design these things. Lots of things that seem ridiculous to me, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them. The whole process of performing brain surgery, for example, they saw the top of your head off and then you get these little things that are like cutlery. The surgeon gets these things that look like they're cutlery, various medical instruments, and they use them to fiddle around with your mind. None of that makes sense to me, but that doesn't mean that it's fake or anything. So just as the process of brain surgery and how to perform it doesn't make sense to me, the whole toilet thing doesn't make sense to me, but that's okay, I'm not a plumber. I suspect there are plumbers to whom it doesn't make sense either. Just because they repaired these toilets, that doesn't mean they approve of the design and the general. There's probably plumbers going around now who think the whole design of these toilets and this sewage system is absolutely ridiculous. And if I was designing it from scratch, I would do it differently. But they don't arrive at this until they've been trained and experienced in this thing. They've seen hundreds of toilets in their lifetime, so they've had time to come to these conclusions. The average normal human being who goes and looks at a toilet could not be expected to assess whether that's a reasonable design, a reasonable system to have in a society. What they could do, though, is have a look at the history books and look at what they used to have. And what they used to have was rivers of shit flowing through every village and everyone dying in their 20s of some disease that they caught from their own piss or someone else's that they didn't even know about. They also didn't even know that it might be advantageous to wash their hands. I was listening to a book about the history of surgery recently. There was doctors who, when they discovered that it might be a good idea to wash your hands when you're doing surgery, for a long time they thought, no, that's ridiculous. We're not going to do that. That doesn't make any sense. Why would washing your hands make a difference to disease spreading? And they figured this out. Someone was studying a maternity hospital. They said there is loads of women dying in childbirth. He brought in an experiment whereby the staff would wash their hands. They tried it out for a few months and there was something like a 99% decrease in deaths or something. Maybe not quite 99%, but it was very high. And then the doctors came on board. They thought, oh, maybe it's unexplained, but there seems to be something to this. I don't know, but we'll try it out for a bit longer, I suppose. And then eventually they decided, oh, maybe we'll start washing our hands. Seems to be something happening with that until we find a more proper explanation as to why this is happening. We'll wash our hands and just act as if washing our hands somehow helps. Like an OCD, maybe they thought it was an OCD thing. Surgeons all have OCD, and if they wash their hands, that somehow helps them clear their mind so they can concentrate on the surgery and not think about the fact that if they don't wash their hands and touch the door frame 4 times on each side as they pass through it, their whole family is going to be wiped out by a comet and it'll all be their fault. they do the OCD hand washing thing. They think this doesn't do anything to directly affect anyone's health or safety, but it helps clear my mind so I'm not having intrusive thoughts. And they probably think that helps the surgeons and they can concentrate better. Now that's weird. When I said there was going to be 2 minutes before we'll know whether that's rain or the toilet refilling, I was lying because I was 100% certain that the sound I could hear was rain falling outside the window. Well, it seems to have stopped now, so that would suggest that the noise was the toilet refilling. It didn't sound like that at all to me. It sounded like rain. It didn't sound at all like toilet. Oh, wait, I can hear it a bit again now. Oh, yes, there it is. Oh, there's the rain. Technically, it's old rain dripping from a drainage pipe outside or something, I think, draining off from somewhere. So, yes, I was right. I was reasonable. I was being reasonable. I know what a toilet refilling sounds like. I'm not that stupid. I can't tell the difference between my own toilet refilling that I've listened to here on these joint headphones at least once a week for the past year and a half or so. I've sat in this room after taking a piss break and listened to the toilet refilling, the toilet cistern refilling in the ensuite toilet. So I know what it sounds like, and it's magnified over these headphones and through the microphone into my head as well. So I get a good listen to that. So if I tell you I'm not sure whether it's raining or it's the cistern refilling, no, that's nonsense. That's a lie. I was lying to you. I would hope you'd know that by now, though. Anyway, no, the whole thing of having your toilet refilling after you've filled it, I suppose it's a dilution thing, maybe, would make sense. You would think, I pissed into that, that needs to be diluted so it's safe. So say if I piss 300 milliliters of liquid into the toilet, I suppose for that to be filling up with water that dilutes it, I suppose that would somewhat make sense. So you dilute the water before you send it back into the public water system. Makes it a bit safer. That's obviously not what they do. I'm just saying if I was someone looking back at this from the future, wondering how the sewage system works back there in 21st century Ireland, that might be reasonable to come to that conclusion and think, oh, that's why he's talking about the toilet refilling. Actually, now that I think about it, no, because it wouldn't be refilling. It would be filling, because I haven't emptied the toilet of anything. I suppose I've emptied the cistern by flushing it. I suppose that's what we mean when we say the toilet refilling. The toilet isn't refilling, the cistern is refilling. And the cistern is a separate thing. As anyone would know, I didn't realise this, I admit, until quite recently when I had to get a toilet replaced. It never occurred to me that the toilet and the cistern were two separate things until I bought my first toilet from scratch, where the plumber hadn't bought the toilet. I bought the toilet in advance and it arrived in two separate boxes, because the cistern comes in one box and the main toilet comes in the other. So yes, there are two separate devices. They are connected. They are two separate devices. It's like buying a waste disposal bucket and kitchen sink. Is that right? I've never had a waste disposal system. I've only seen them on TV. Some sort of thing in your kitchen sink where you open it up and you put stuff in and it grinds it down to a pulp with these sharp teeth-like cogs. It's like a paper shredder that you have in an office, except you're using it for food and for some reason it's in your kitchen sink. You put it into your kitchen sink, you put the food down into your kitchen sink and it goes into a shredder thing. And then Bat puts it into a bin that's presumably in the cupboard under your sink. Is that right? That sounds a bit odd to me. But from what I understand it, people have waste, they call these waste disposal systems. I don't know. And they're not that new either. They've been around for a while. In fact, they were around before we had things like wheelie bins and recycling collections and separate collections for recycling and compost. They had these so-called waste disposal systems. It's not disposing of it at all. That's a waste storage system. You're putting this food into a hole in your sink. You're presumably pressing a button and it's sucking it down, grinding it up, and then putting it in a bag under your sink in the press. And putting it in the press, this fucking should at least be a fridge there. If you're going to save old, wasted food in a press under your kitchen sink, it should at least be refrigerated. Because most of that food, if you've just been eating it and this is the leftovers, it's not at its best before day yet, but it's probably approaching it. Going to start to stink soon. That should be refrigerated. You might think that's wasteful, but if you're going to have air conditioning, there's probably some way you can incorporate a waste refrigerating system into your air conditioning system. Look at your wheelie bins outside. They stink to high heaven. They smell like what the eggs would smell like if some child pelted your front sitting room window with eggs the Halloween before last and you still hadn't cleaned it up. That's what it smells like, your bin. So what you do there, of course, you get this powder. You put some powder in the bin every time it's emptied and that sucks up all the dampness and smells and that helps. And then your bin smells. I got a new one recently of those. My compost bin smells of perfume at the moment. Fucking fantastic. Point is, if your bin can get that smelly just from having stuff sitting in it for a week, then imagine what happens with that stuff that's being sucked through your waste disposal system, through your kitchen sink and into that storage bin underneath it until you get round to emptying it. It makes sense to have that refrigerated. Have a refrigerated press under there. Refrigerated bin. And then you wouldn't have to change it as often because it wouldn't get smelly as often. Saving a bit of money there. From what I understand, would a freezer be more cost effective? I don't know. Because they say once it's frozen, the freezer doesn't use much electricity at all. If the technology could get to the point where we could cryogenically freeze our waste, that would be even more efficient. Because if you cryogenically freeze your waste, like was rumoured to have been done to either Jim Henson or Walt Disney, all these billionaires. If you could get your organic waste cryogenically frozen, especially vegetables and stuff like that, there may come along some technology in the future that can revive it, turn it back into seeds or do whatever they do to the dinosaurs to bring them back in Jurassic Park, but do that for vegetation, like your old potatoes from last Wednesday's dinner. If you could cryogenically freeze the waste potatoes, that might come in useful someday. I don't know how cryogenic freezing works. Do you have to keep it frozen in a cryogenic freezer then? Or do you just flash freeze it once? Do you flash cryogenically freeze someone and then that's permanent? I don't know. I've never looked into this stuff. It's only just coming to mind now. Should I research it for a further episode? Maybe you're thinking that. Well, no, this is not that kind of program. It's not that kind of program. I've probably never mentioned this again. So that's cryogenically freezing your waste for you. There's a siren going off in the neighbourhood. Well, it's probably outside of the neighbourhood because I think it's down on the main road there, which I wouldn't consider to be part of the neighbourhood. The neighbourhood. Oh, that reminds me. Older listeners may remember I used to talk about the Cat Interstate Superhighway wall in the old estate where we used to live. A big wall that went along the side of our front garden and our side garden and our back garden and then went along the edge of the estate between our housing estate and the next. This wall went on for ages and ages and ages. Covered four or five separate cul-de-sacs on each side that went along the end of each of these cul-de-sacs. Any cat who wanted to entertain themselves in that house, first thing they do is go out, they go along our front wall, then they climb up onto this very satisfying high up interstate highway wall, and they'd walk along that. It'd be like walking along one of those highways you Americans have in the middle of all of your cities. Those big ugly highways up on these green stilts, and it's particularly safe because it's at the end of each cul-de-sac along which it passes. But that wall has been somewhat superseded now. They built a road along the back of the estate, along the back of that estate, and cutting through the middle of the adjacent estate. Any cat who gets to the end of that wall, they have to jump down, and then if they want to pick up that interstate highway wall again, they'd have to jump down where it's being dissected by this new kind of ring road around the town. So they get off that wall, there's a pedestrian crossing traffic light, so they'd have to go up there, have someone press the button for them, and then wait for it to be safe to cross, and then pick the wall up again at the other side of the new road. I don't think that's very satisfactory. Just goes to show, if you're moving into a house and you're planning to have cats, so obviously you're going to live at the end of a cul-de-sac. Look where the wall goes that goes along the side of the estate and the end of all the cul-de-sacs. Guy always thought that that wall would be there forever. Why would they build anything around the back of that? It was out at the edge of town. Built these two estates at the end of the Celtic Tiger property boom, and then everything ground to a halt. So I was under the impression they would never build anything on that end of the town ever again, except for that road which they'd been trying to build for 40 years. And then somehow, is this a load of bollocks? I think it probably is. And it probably is.
Into your head.
I know you young people live in apartments nowadays, but back in the land before time when people lived in houses, a lot of these houses did have an outhouse that was called a boiler house. I have one of these, a little outhouse. It has the central heating boiler apparatus in it. It also has a very low concrete roof. It's about 4 foot high. And the inside of it, if you have the temerity not to duck your head enough, it's a strong possibility that you bang your head against this solid concrete ceiling of this thing. I find it terrifying, so I don't go in there much at all. You can't really go in there. The boiler house, it's mostly taken up by the boiler. Well, sometimes you have to open it and look into it, see if everything's switched on and working. So you lean down to look at it, and then you forget that you're leaning down under a concrete roof, and you suddenly stand up and you crack your head, and then you die, I assume. I can only imagine you die if that happens. I'm amazed it hasn't happened to me. I'm amazed I'm alive living in this house. There's a wooden frame on the door, I suppose. That's your one possible insulation against banging your head against this. Well, no, there's a very strong chance. In fact, I think I did years ago, years and years and years ago, I think I did once bang my head against the ceiling of that boiler house, and obviously I survived. The fact that I don't remember much about it probably tells you what it did to me. I don't know. Those were the days. This was my mother's house years ago, and that boiler house used to be a place of pleasure for me in those days, because I didn't have to worry about the maintenance of the house or the central heating or anything. That boiler house used to be a place, on a sunny day, I'd go out, I'd climb up under the roof of that boiler house. It's not very high, it's about 4 feet high, and I'd sit on the roof reading or listening to stuff. Many years ago, I got a nice bit of sun in there. The vegetation wasn't overgrown in the neighbourhood. Yes, you could have a nice view. You could see the hills of Wicklow. You could hear the sounds from around the neighbourhood. A nice bit of sun there. I used to like sitting on the roof of that boiler house. But those were innocent days. I wasn't a homeowner or a home occupier or an adult. I suppose I was an adult. I was a student. To be fair, I was a student in my 20s, so I suppose in a way I was an adult. I just didn't have responsibilities. The boiler house wasn't a place I associated with adult responsibilities. There was a nice little concrete thing that I could sit on. It was great. Beside the boiler house, there's an oil tank, which I find not so great. You can't sit in it, for one thing. It's round. And I associate it with trying to figure out whether we have fucking oil, which is impossible. You're supposed to use this dipstick. You dip it into the oil tank and you take it out. There's a marker on it. It says on the marker, if the oil is below this level, ringing, order a refill. You can't see the fucking thing. Best you can do is put the dipstick back in and kind of move it around try to figure out whether it feels like the oil is deep. When you move it around, it feels like pushing your feet around in a swimming pool under the water. You can feel there's much swishing around going on. There's quite a skill to that, and one that I haven't acquired. I don't know how normal people manage. I am a normal person, but I don't know how normal people manage. I don't know how I manage with that. Just get the same amount every couple of months at the same time and just base it on pattern, I suppose. Oh no, I like that part of the garden as it was 20 years ago when there was less responsibility involved. Now I look at the oil tank and I see a fucking hole in my wallet. It's leaking at a great rate. And I look at the boiler house and I see a thing that's going to destroy my skull if I'm not careful. I have very little interest in sitting on the roof with these days. I think I've grown out of that. You sit there and you just look and you say, oh Christ, look at this garden. Look at this garden. Looks like shit. In fact, there probably is shit in it. Literally. That's the problem with becoming an adult, as I did some time ago. In fact, I'm becoming more than an adult now. I think I'm... What do you become after you become an adult? I suppose you become a mature adult. And then you become a middle-aged adult. And then you become an elderly adult. And then you become a very elderly adult. And then you become the oldest person in the world. And then you advance past that. You become the longest living person ever to exist on the planet. And then you keep going for another... Go for long enough and you end up passing the ages of everybody in the Old Testament of the Bible, because they all lived to 700 years, 800 years, 900 years. You surpass that. And that's going to be weird for me, because I'm just going to have, I'm going to have dozens and dozens and dozens of cats and no grandchildren. So that'll be interesting then. You're probably thinking, how do you know you'll have no grandchildren? Well, I don't think you can adopt grandchildren, can you? No. So there's no other way that would happen naturally. You can't adopt a grandchild, especially if you haven't. You don't go, oh, I've no children, I'm going to adopt a grandchild. No. Well, firstly, I wouldn't want to. Why would you adopt a grandchild? No. You get one of your children to adopt that. So first, I suppose if you adopt a child and then that child adopts a child, is that your grandchild? I don't know. How does that work? I don't know. I suppose there's no reason to worry. Well, I'm not worried about her. There's no reason to worry about her. I'm not worried about her. I'm not worried. I'm looking forward to when I become the oldest person in the world. Head into the thousands. We're up to episode 860 now. So we'll soon be up into the four digits. That'll be great. Definitely be the oldest person in the world then. And then now Frank from the Overnightscape, I think he's up to something like 2,500 as of his last count. So still have some catching up to do with them. Well, that's not really age, is it? That's the number of episodes you've made in your podcast. So I suppose that's not the same. The number of episodes you've made of your podcast is really not the same as the number of years you've lived on Earth. To be fair, it's a separate, completely different concept. Especially in the case of this podcast, where there were 200 or 300 episodes that were daily version that was only a few minutes long. So it's a bit weird to be saying you've 860 episodes under your belt when some of them were very short. Some of them were quite long. The bulk of them were something like 20 or 30 minutes. In recent months, there's been some that have been around an hour. So no, you can't really compare that to measuring your life in years. No, you can't say, oh, he's done 860 podcasts, therefore he's probably, I would estimate, going on 50 years of age. No, it doesn't work like that. That doesn't... If you manage to figure out someone's age from that, you've just got lucky. You haven't really calculated it at all. You just think you have, or else you're lying to yourself. You don't think you have, but you're lying to yourself, which is even worse than mistakenly thinking you're right. and knowing you're wrong, but then telling yourself that you're right. Wait, why would you do that? You wouldn't. This is going to shit again, isn't it? Probably is. Anyway, that's enough boiler talk for today. Over the other side of the garden to the right, there's the shed. Referred to elsewhere in this episode as the laundry shed. And it is a laundry shed. It has the laundry equipment in it. But there's more to the shed than that. There's more to the shed than that. If you're ever coming into my back garden and thinking of burglarizing my home, and you're thinking, will I bother looking into the shed? I think that's just a laundry shed, is it? I suspect any washing machine and dryer I find in here isn't going to be a particularly fancy or valuable one, and it's really not going to be worth stealing. Have to get it out of the shed first. It's a noisy metal shed. Not going to be able to do that quietly. Going to have to remove the clothes from it. Well, actually, no, leave the clothes in. That might make less noise. And move them out, get them out through a big cloaky gate, or else throw them over a wall, the washing machine and dryer. Now, the tumble dryer is a lot lighter than the washing machine, so it might be possible to throw that over a wall. So you throw that over a wall into the public green beside us, but then that's going to attract a lot of attention as well. And then after you leave, going to have to go and retrieve that from the public green area. It's well in off the road. You have to find it and then get it over to the road and put it into your burglary service van or whatever you're using. That sounds like a lot of effort to me. But no, there is more to that shed than the laundry. But nothing valuable. So maybe old bits of wood waiting to go in the next skip, or bits of old broken things. A few half tubs of paint that nobody's ever going to use. Maybe not a sweeping brush. There's no outdoors. The outdoor sweeping brush is still in here, to my shame. To my absolute I mentioned this on a recent episode. I noticed that the outdoor sweeping brush is in this room where I am now. I made a mental note to myself and an audio note to myself on that episode that I needed to go back in the shed, but it's not in the shed. See, if you come here hoping to steal a sweeping brush from the shed, well, maybe it'll be there by then. I don't know. I think, to be fair, in the current generation, all you young people who are never going to be able to own any property by the looks of it at the moment, from everything the news is telling you, you probably look at people like me and you think, oh Christ, not only does he own a house, he has two separate outhouses. He has his boiler in one side of the garden and his shed in the other. That seems very extravagant. The boiler house was built with the house. I had no control over that. The shed was a later add-on, a later adjunct. And it's true, it was added to a different part of the garden to where the boiler is. So it's like if you had a planet and had more than one moon. But that's most planets, to be fair. Well, no, if you had more than one natural satellite, and one of them was the boiler house and the other one was the... I suppose you have a point there. That is a bit extravagant because they put the shed in a different part of the garden to where the boiler house is. The electrics for the shed have to have a whole separate line coming out that side of the house to serve that side of the garden, instead of just being an extension of whatever serves the boiler house. I suppose there's that. But that's not costing you anything. Just an electrician came out and connected up the shed one day. It wasn't a big, huge deal. For you young people, you're probably thinking, oh yeah, two separate outhouses. One for the boiler in one direction and one for the shed going in the other direction. You probably think that's very extravagant. And he's got laundry. That's right. He's got his own laundry in his home. Well, it's not in my home. It's been banished to a shed many, many years ago. It was considered too noisy. Now, I suppose you have a point there. You young people, though, you do all your laundry in some place at the other side of town. If it's one of you Americans, you all start driving at age 12 so you can go to a laundrette at the other side of town or one of those self-service things they have outside petrol stations on the highway or something. Oh no, the rest of us mere mortals, we don't start driving at age 13. And when we first move out or when we get our first home, we're not necessarily driving. Then we don't go around carrying our laundry all over the place. You know, it's quite reasonable to have a washing machine in our home, especially if we're adults. I'm an adult. I don't think it's unreasonable for me to have a washing machine. And if it's not unreasonable for me to have a washing machine, it's also not unreasonable for me to have a tumble dryer, not least because the clothesline is shit. I think it's because the wind in the area is insufficient or it's too much shelter. So if I was to destroy some of the greenery in this neighbourhood, chop down some hedges and trees, it would be better drying on the washing line. But that seems a bit extravagant and destructive. Anyway, you young people, you probably think, Christ, I wonder if he's got two outhouses at the back, what has he got at the front? Well, at the front there's the road and then there's no further outhouses or satellites of this house. There isn't a granny flat or a sentry. What have we done now? 18 minutes about my boiler. Well, that's not true. I talked about the boiler house and then said, that's enough boiler house talk for today. And then I moved on to the shed. So that's fine. Oh, there's a kennel at the side. Now, that's not really a structure. It's not built into anything. It's a plastic shelter. It's not used for a dog. It used to be used for a dog at one point, and then for a while it was used as a cat bathroom. It used to be a cat litter tray inside it, and it was indoors. It's now used as a... I'm not going to tell you what it's used for. It's nothing exciting, though. It's nothing exciting or vulgar or interesting or shocking. It's just not a dog. Why would you have a dog living in a kennel? No. Now you put your dog in a kennel when you go away for a couple of days and you can't bring them with you. You don't put them in a kennel at home. That would be like if you had a cattery out in your back garden and you kept your cats there. No, you bring them into the house. Let them do their cat stuff in here. Same with your children. You wouldn't keep your children in a thing out the back. Sort of playground, an outhouse, it's a playroom. Although it was good enough for Roald Dahl. Roald Dahl used to write in his shed. He didn't keep his children out there, but Roald Dahl, author of, among other things, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, he used to write in his shed. His whole world of children's literature that he created, that was all done in the shed in his back garden. He'd go out there, he'd sit down in the morning, and he'd say, right, time to get to work. I'm going to get to work here. I'm going to write some shit. I'm going to write it down, I'm going to get out my biro and start writing. I presume he didn't use a typewriter or a word processor or anything. This was back in the 80s. Our shed wasn't wired for electricity in those days. Although I suppose Roald Dahl was using his own shed. He wasn't using our shed, so there's that. Would he not find the laundry a bit noisy? Maybe he wouldn't. People work with the radio on, blasting music out all day, so don't see why it should be any more distracting to have a washing machine on the go. It's a regular, persistent noise. It's like background sounds. It shouldn't be much of a big deal. It's like when you sleep with a white noise app on. It's actually quite helpful sometimes. So, no, that's that. That's the second time I brought up on this program that Roald Dahl worked in his shed. Isn't that interesting? Just not that fact that he worked in a shed, the fact that I've mentioned this more than once now. In fact, I think last year they incorporated Roald Dahl's shed into the title of the episode. Isn't that fascinating? Absolutely, absolutely fascinating. People studying my brain 100 years from now. I'm not going to leave my brain to science, but I'll still be able to study it using records of what I've done with my brain. You don't need a brain to study what you've done with your brain. If you want to study Einstein's brain, you don't need to dig him up and get out the brain and have a look. No, you look at all the written and recorded evidence of what he did with his brain. Look at the formulas. He wrote all these formulas. He said, didn't he do E equals MC squared? And then he did, I don't know any of his other equations. They're probably all the same, are they? Probably are, because you do one equation and then you say, oh, this is great. You get the buzz from figuring out this equation. You have the equal sign in the middle. You have one side as E and the other side is MC squared, and you figure it out and you go, oh, this is great. The hit you get from getting two things to balance. And then you spend the rest of your life just trying to get that buzz again. So you find other things that are the same as that equation. So you can have more than one equals. You do A equals MC squared. And then you go, oh, what else does E equal? You can go E equals MC squared equals RQP equals 6457 equals whatever else you come up with. You can keep extending this. I suppose you call it a multi-equation or something, would you? It's an equation, but there's more than two sides to it and they all balance each other. So you could probably spend the rest of your life looking for other things that E equals. And you just extend the equation. And that's quite an eloquent way to do it. Because mathematicians like to talk about eloquent solutions. They say, oh, look, you did A equals MC squared. That's an eloquent solution to this mathematical problem that no one understands. Well, it's eloquent. So he spent the rest of his life going E equals MC squared equals whatever else it's equal to. There must be plenty of other things that it's equal to. You just have to find them. You just have to find them. Hopefully there isn't some mathematician somewhere else who does Q equals RC cubed and that happens to also equal C and also equal MC squared. Because that means the two of you in different parts of the world, you've had these two mathematicians in different parts of the world working unknowingly on what is essentially the same problem, and it's duplication of work. You don't want that. That's not a good use of the world's scientific resources, especially in Einstein's case. There was a world emergency going on. The Second World War was going on while Einstein was doing all this work. You need your scientists to working on stuff. You don't need them having duplication of each other's work unknowingly. All that does is make Hitler delighted. While those scientists are being kept busy, they're not finding ways to kill me and remove me from my war thing. So Hitler is probably delighted about that, if that happened. I'm not saying it did. I've no idea whether there's anyone unknowingly duplicating Einstein's work by working on M equals RC cubed or something, which also happens to be equal to E equals MC squared. No. Anyway, good morning.